This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. We are back from the summer break. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Sieber, good morning. Robert, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all of you, dear listeners, from wherever you are listening right now.
Yeah, exactly. Peter, here we go again. Today we will start with how an approach like AI recognizes sounds. That's very interesting. You did a recording with Katrin from Switzerland.
Right.
But before, let's talk about what happened in the last weeks.
Right.
Do you want to start?
Yeah, we were on holidays, yeah. Right? Many of us were on holidays, but maybe not everybody, right? There was this article from the former Google CEO. We don't want to go into the details of that one about the work attitude at a specific former company of his. So we don't want to discuss that. Let me start with agents. I love agents.
You love agents, yeah.
Yeah, I have two agent messages from two of the big three strategy consulting firms. One is McKinsey. I shared that on LinkedIn yesterday. It's about why agents are going to be the next frontier of Gen AI, from content to action. Mm-hmm. That's very nice quote and stuff, but it really is, you know, what we are doing today. You know, we ask a chatbot and we get an answer. We ask maybe an LLM to create an image, you know, maybe at the very end or somewhere we can talk about Black Forest, by the way, but that's a different topic. That's what we're doing today. And we're doing millions of other things with the large language models, right? And that McKinsey is convinced, and I can strongly confirm, is going to be moving to a complex task. And that task can be in the office, you know, for all the office workers out there, or it can be on our shop floor. You know, that's our topic. Number one. Number two, it's a Boston Consulting Group. I believe, actually, if I say number one, two, the first is actually bigger than the second, but they're both very big, right? They have this paper about AI lowering the entry barriers for lights out factories.
Also, very interesting headlines.
Yeah, but what is behind? It's about autonomy, right? It's about autonomous. It's about agents bringing the power of Gen AI to robotics. Robotics is you have had a separate podcast on robotics, right? So, as I started saying, I'm a big fan of agents. I say also in relation to what it is already that we use as our most important appliance, our smartphone. I say forget apps. I'm so convinced we're all going to have our personal assistant, and that is probably going to be on our smartphone for the foreseeable future. Is the hardware going to be a little bit different? Are there going to be other pieces of hardware? Most certainly, all kind of edges, all kind of PLCs for us, you know, so to say, sensors. When we talk in the end, you know, the interview that you already announced, it's about a very special sensor, which is a microphone, which is what I'm speaking into right here. And it's then doing all the machine learning, all the AI on top of it. So I think the combination of where we are today, Gen AI, moving towards agents, it's a hot topic and I'm a big fan of it.
I'm going to record an episode with Rainer Brehm from Siemens, exactly on this topic about agents. We talk about, the LLM and Gen AI activities at Siemens, but the next step for sure is building agents in their system and provide agents to their customers. We already had an episode, you did an episode, the last episode we published about agents. It was Nox agent or something.
That was with Youssef from Facilis AI, right? And they're amazingly far ahead. That was probably the one that really triggered me But it's very good to see that there are so many platforms, the big tech companies, if it's Microsoft, Google, Amazon, all of them have been moving towards and provided capabilities for you, developers listening to us, to be building. You know, let's not forget Andrew Wang, I come to him later on as well, helping us all to develop agentic. And you recall that I don't like that word. And I must say, I haven't heard it that much lately. Not because I've been saying that. I think agentic is a bit of a weird terminology. I think agents is perfectly fine. And I think we all understand the concept of agents.
Yeah, it's very interesting because Aleph Alpha has presented a new model and, more important, an operating system for Gen AI. So the model is no longer as important as the development of a platform or operating system. And they advertise its benefits, Europe, transparency, etc. But I'm not sure what this operating system is supposed to be. I ask whether a machine builder brings a new Gen AI operating system into the company or doesn't want it all with one provider that also does the infrastructure or is responsible for the automation. Because, and then you have a new operating system for your Gen AI topics. And then, now we are at the point agents, then there is also a question of whether the operating system will create and manage agents and what the connection to the control world would like. So many questions. Maybe I'm totally wrong, but yeah, there are a lot of question marks with the new Aleph Alpha strategy operating system.
Yeah. Well, but the direction had been set forward already a month or two ago, I believe, right? I forget his name, one of the co-founders of OpenAI. Shame on me that I don't. I mean, he was standing on a big stage and announcing that, you know, AI was going to be the big, or Gen AI was going to be the new operating system. It's all terminologies. In the end, as you were saying it, and if I try to understand it, it's all the different levels that we've had.
Exactly.
You know? And I've been in this world for 40 years. And I started with moving registers on a microprocessor. We don't do that anymore these days. And since then, maybe you could almost say like every second year, this is not a new Seeberg law like Moore's law, but every second year, there has been a new layer.
Oh, yeah.
And you could say that if we say that these days, the domain experts from you, who can start, you know, moving bits and pieces, doing things that before maybe at the next level layer still continue to do a programmer, do the coding for you. That's just one example. So at the very top, there is now all these new layers and whatever we're going to call them. You know, we talked about Gen AI Genesis, you know, Jakub, all best regards from Robert and myself here, that we have had platforms for 10 years, I guess. Now, are agents going to sit on top of platforms? Is an operating system, that is interesting because operating system typically sits at the bottom, right?
Exactly. No,
not at the processor level, but maybe it's not the bottom, but it's very low. So if it's, does that mean that everything that, so this complete stack that we've built over 40 years that we're going to move it aside? I'm not sure about that, if that's being meant. Let's follow that. For me, depending on who you are, I would say, if you're more like a user kind of type, I would say agents are the thing for you. If you are a developer, then you probably want to follow all of these. You want to know, what is it about a new operating system? Is the platform going to go away? Is there going to be a new operating system under a platform? It's all these different terminologies, which are the topic of, you know, architects, I guess.
Sure. Right? Sure. But I'm not sure if companies will accept these new layers and will accept new systems and new operating system. From my point of view, because on my vacation, I met Jan Kutnik. We had an episode with Jan, and we talked about the market of AI integrators and stuff like that. And his opinion is that the market for integrators will grow extremely because mid-sized company are not capable to integrate AI solutions. They heard something they can do, but they have not the manpower, the labor shortage, etc. So they hire an integrator to do the work. And they want a plug-and-play solution. They don't want to buy the camera. They don't want to train it by their own. They don't want to install. They don't want to connect the camera with the PLC and the sure. conveyor belt and stuff like that. So I think, yeah, the integrator market is we will see a boom there in this market. And I'm not sure if you now offer a new layer, a new operating system. I think I'm not convinced. Yeah.
Yeah, the way it was presented was more like a very long-term view on what may happen. But that's different from Aleph Alpha. I read the same thing. They seem to say a kernel exists today. And then I was also asking, because the integrators that you just talked about, they need to integrate, and they typically integrate everything on top of an operating system.
Exactly.
So the first decision they need to make is that the client you, listener, have made, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, and you probably stick to or not, you know, so you were on Microsoft and then there was Linux, and you have made very, very basic decisions on the basis of this operating system, just to mention two of them, two important of them, right? And I agree with you. So you cannot, from day to one to tomorrow, cannot change that operating system because everything else sits on top of it.
Yeah, you need to have a connection to the control world, to the real world, then. If you want to deploy something in your environment and on your shop floor, you have to need to connection to your TwinCAT solution, for example.
Right.
But maybe we are both wrong, because I think they are fully focused on the public administration at Aleph Alpha. Maybe that's the right spot. Yeah.
Although they did mention manufacturing as well specifically.
Yeah.
So maybe we should invite him one of these days and ask him.
What else do you have?
Talking of robots, you know, I shared two YouTube videos in the last couple of days. I was very impressed. One was the Unitree G1. I saw that you did something
Humanoid.
On them as well.
Yeah,
a Chinese company, Unitree. They talked of embodied AI. I liked that a lot. So we've been talking about embedded systems. We talked of, you know, always from the beginning, you know, where do you put your model? Is it in the cloud or is it on the edge? And a wonderful word for putting artificial intelligence, Gen AI, whatever we're going to call it, agents into a piece of hardware, you know, call it a robot, call it a humanoid, and I'll come to that in a moment. Embodied AI, wonderful. But again, it's a little bit of a difficult...
Let me add something. I have one political note there, because in the US, they are discussing to ban Chinese humanoid robots in the near future. There's a discussion in the Congress, I think, because they are afraid when they're going through the factories and going through the cities or whatever. So they have this TikTok topic, they have this Huawei topic, now they have... They have a discussion on cars, on software.
Well, ASML, chips.
Chips. And now we have the discussion on humanoid robots from China, and maybe the US will ban these robots. Yeah.
Yeah, it's sure. I mean, on one hand, we know this political discussion. We've had it for, I mean, as long as I've been part, as I just said at the very beginning, there was always like a black book on countries where, as at Inter, we were not allowed to ship to.
Sure.
That's not new, right? It's been there for 40 years or probably even longer. So we all know that. Nobody really likes it, I think, but... some of us support it, some of us support it maybe less. That's one thing. And on the other hand, maybe you have the same discussion where companies like who, like Meta, like others, is it Apple, have said we're not going to come to the European market, you know,
exactly.
and then others are coming and say that's just bullshit because they don't have their act together. Mm. I'm not going to give my vote here for one or the other, but it's all part of that. The reason I was sharing these, and then the second one is then, let me call it, is the figure two, because it is, of course, that's the example. You know, one is US-based right? And we shall say, where's number three? And let's discuss that. And where's Europe, right? Because Europe has been very, very strong in robotics, but are we going to still be strong? Let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. But it's about, here is a US company and here's a Chinese company. And do I want to just block my market for, you know, that's probably always going to be the same. So number two, figure, I looked at that as one, also very impressive, finance and partnered by OpenAI, amongst many others. And then you see it in the BMW production line.
Yeah,
that's what brings back to all discussion about the use of humanoids. And I am honest, and I have always been saying I do not believe humanoids to be coming into the factory. And now you see that they do. And the reason I've understood is you always have this thing. If we are in our environment, we have like, you know, greenfield factories, brownfield. So the brownfield, especially in process, you know, something to do with coal, whatever, energy, typically, you know, they're standing there for 30, 40 years. If you are more in the discrete manufacturing, a new car, you know, there's a new, you try to change your product line, if not possible, you build a new factory next door, right? Takes a year or two and then you have a new. So I have always been of the belief that the human being as we are, we're perfect as we are. I'm very happy with myself and with you and everybody else. But I do believe that the humanoid robot is not the perfect piece, tool, be it smart or not, to be helpful in the factory. I do not believe that. Now, for a transitional phase for those factories, which are the brownfield factories, and you want to start, you know, you can't find humans anymore, and then you can send in robots. I do understand that, but I still do not, and I'm very much looking forward to your view, also the view of you, dear listeners. What does that mean then? I mean, in the long run, is it still going to be humanoids, or are we going to have different types of robots?
Yeah, maybe. I'm a bit skeptical when we talk about energy consumption of these robots and stuff like that.
Okay.
But we see, as you mentioned, batteries are becoming better and stuff like that. But when we talk about robots, then we also, humanoid robots, we also have to discuss now the old discussion, is Transformer the best technology for this kind of robots, because it's very intensive. You need a lot of GPUs, you need a lot of CPU, you need a lot of power. And maybe there are other aspects also to look at when you talk about humanoids and what they are capable to do. And from our point of view, maybe it's interesting to talk about then in the near future about the architecture of these humanoids. What is under the hood of these humanoids? And yeah, there are some European projects. I think in Norway is a humanoid project together with OpenAI. Then also in Germany, there's a company working on humanoids. But maybe I'm not convinced by the walking humanoids. Maybe you will have wheels or stuff like that. I'm not sure. But let's talk about
that. Yeah. Sure, yep. But that's exactly my point, right?
Yep.
And as soon as you decide that, you know, walking for a robot is not the perfect thing to do, at least not today, let's give the thing wheels, then I believe we shouldn't call them humanoids. And that's exactly my point. It doesn't matter. You know, we've had robotic arms for 20, 30 years. We've had cobots for 20 years. And we've had all these, should I say, very evenly spread, maybe. I mean, Japan has always been very big. Yaskawa, I don't know all of them, you know them a lot better.
Panu,
you know, we had KUKA, became Chinese. We have ABB, help me. There's so many other, each of them with their own color, you know, the yellow, the blue, and et cetera, et cetera. And where are these? You know better than I. Where are these companies? Do they believe in a humanoid? Or is it in the end all the humanoid is going to be the personal assistant in the home for the consumer? Although that is not the way they're being presented today.
We see a lot of Japanese companies working on humanoids in the service sector. You know, when you are a guest at a hotel or in a hospital, maybe.
Hospital, I've seen, exactly.
Yeah. But we do not see any humanoid activities from the traditional Japanese manufacturers. surprisingly.
But also not from the other traditional ones.
You know, exactly.
The ones that come to my brain is, again, ABB, KUKA, et cetera. Do they do this? I mean,
no.
Let's follow this. It's very interesting to see how far they've moved, and it's very impressive to look at them. I'm still need to be convinced, I guess, that they are the right solution for the factory.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and we should then talk about transformers and alternatives to transformers, how these humanoids learn at the end.
Let me jump in. Sepp is proud. Sepp Hochreiter, again, XLSTM excels in time series prediction, that is. There's a paper, there's authors from Oxford, Pennsylvania, China, I believe. And again, in the topic of time series, which I have another message on here as well.
Is it an industrial approach or is it traffic?
No, it technically is not. And that is also what the next message that I have, where the time GPT, you may recall, I mentioned that one. So it's about time series foundation model. They say they're the first one. We've talked about this for a couple of years, you know, in our conferences. We've always said, you know, we need an industrial foundation model. They say they have one. So I talked to Max Mergenthaler, Conseco. He's the co-founder of Nixtla. And it's exactly, you know, still the answer to your question there, because what they typically, and also Nixtla, have been dealing with is data in financial, in weather, in energy. So, I mean, topics, you know, kind of circumventing, but not specifically. You may recall that I had suggested, you know, should we be, you know, providing them with our industrial data? And Max has been coming back to me a month or two later. He said, Peter, sorry for ghosting you. We've been swamped. This is definitely interesting. So if you, dear listener, have a set of industrial data and you believe in the Nixtla time GPT approach of doing time series, you know, we're going to share Max's contact. You know, maybe you want to send him your industrial data, find a way of, you know, getting back what it is that you put in. So we're going to find out.
And maybe that is, we should do an interview with him.
Yeah, I did ask this morning, actually. So he came back 3 months later. But he's so they were just taken in this morning or a couple of weeks back by Microsoft. So they are now available on the Microsoft Azure as one example. So I can understand they're very, very busy. But still, most certainly, as you say, so the reason that Zap is happy is that he saw once more that XLSTM is better than Transformers, better than Mamba Jamba. Now, the next thing we're going to all be interested in seeing is, you know, is XLSTM better than, for example, the Time GPT as well? And for that reason, you know, they all need to be tested against the same similar industrial data, right? I mean, I don't see a reason why, but that's only a hypothesis, you know. Time series is time series, you know, we have sent. But having said that, that's only a hypothesis that may be assuming that it will work as good, independent if XLSTM or time GPT or whatever it is. But that's only a hypothesis, and we need to be scientific and we need to be doing some testing. Maybe Hugging Face can do that sometime.
I found an interesting paper by Marco Huber and some colleagues, and the topic is, how should AI decision be explained, requirements of explanations from a perspective of European law. And then our friend Tom Cadera from Cadera Design has translated the paper for himself, so to say, and explained AI decisions could entail liability risk, and explanation must be understandable for both laymen and experts. And that was very interesting. The whole paper is very, very interesting. Marco wrote that together with different domain experts. And Tom has been working on this topic also for a long time. And from my point of view, we should invite both to the podcast to get an insight how human-machine interface need to change maybe, and what are these European laws that says you need explanation for your decisions.
AI Act, a topic we I don't know, a topic we normally only hear about in a negative sense. Is that correct? Is that fair to say?
But now we see the first inputs on the AI Act, right? So explanation is needed.
Yeah. Yeah, we only start getting our AI Act together, because sooner than later, we're going to be held responsible, exactly as Thomas said. Yeah, let's do that. Let's look into a combination of...
of Marco.
Yeah, in the end, I think what it is like, because this AI Act is so complex, so difficult, and the big companies, you know, the Siemens, the ABB, whatever, they have huge departments of legal people, and they have, you know, easily 10 people who concentrate on the AI Act, and that's very good and very important. And the small companies just can't. So maybe we can help in this case more the middle-sized small companies to have, you know, a specialist like Marco, and then in combination with Tom, explain what it is that we have to take care of, as far as the AI concerns.
So you talked a lot about robotics. So I was a little bit surprised that you're now in the field of robotics, Peter. So I have something special for you at the end when it comes to robotics. Greetings to Bart De Witte. He shared this information. Hugging Face has just released a comprehensive tutorial on building your own robot. With just a laptop, you can teach it new skills by demonstrating a few moves. And now, quote, this tutorial unlocks the potential of end-to-end learning similar to how LLMs work for text but tailored for robotics. You will learn how to train neural networks to predict the next motor movements directly from camera images. And it's called the Koch version 1.1. It's a low-cost, easy-to-assemble robot arm with improved hardware and no need for soldering. The project includes SolidWorks models, a wiring diagram, assembly videos, making it accessible and customizable. And yeah, I will give it a try. Maybe you will also do that as a new fan of robotics. But thanks, Bart. And Bart said then, robotics will become open source too now. I think robotics is already open source when you talk about ROS, for example, robotic operating systems and stuff like that. But it's huge that now Hugging Face is also in the field of robotics. Yeah.
Yeah, this topic is so big. Robotics is one example. Does that mean that foundation models, the capabilities embedded in the foundation models, that they're gonna be at a higher level, so to say? When I say, do you still need to learn to program Python? That's another topic I had here. Andrew Wang, he has to. I can do that later. But it's the same thing. Do I need to learn coding? I'm interested in robotics. Do I need to learn ROS, or can I take a foundation model and the foundation model does it for me?
Yeah. You want us to share something with Andrew?
Yeah, the final one I was a little bit confused by Andrew Wang, which
he is the new CEO, right? Yeah.
Oh, of what?
No, he's not. He hired a new CEO.
Oh, did he?
For Learning AI, I think.
For one of his companies. Okay. Yeah.
A new.
No, I didn't see that one.
Yeah.
Because I do recall the image of the face of the CEO. I haven't seen that. No. Okay. So Andrew, who I love, and we all do, and he is most certainly the one, top 1, 2, 3 guy worldwide. I was a little bit confused, surprised that he did a new course on Gen AI for everyone. I was not. That's very good. But I was with the Python for beginners. You know my view there. And again, I'm going to be lynched by the programmers. But that's not the point. If you want to do that course, do the course. That's not my point at all. If you want to start doing, and even those of you that until in the past have not been doing coding, and now you think, oh, now it's becoming really easy, go to Andrew. You know, I learned 10 years ago machine learning from Andrew. He's a very, very good teacher. My point is, though, that I'm so convinced that there is an alternative for all of us domain experts. Are we, you and I are not, well, we are domain experts in our area. For all of you that have a specific job to do, you know, start using the foundation models instead. That is my point. And finally, you know, we're not going to go away from the LLMs. Peter Gostev, I've been following for half a year. Okay. He did this video, went back 1.5 years, I think, looking at the top 7 large language models. You see these lines. I can only say, and Peter and I, we both have been like huge supporters of the chatbot arena, right? And I stopped. I leave it up to Peter. He's a lot more knowledgeable into the details. He's doing a wonderful video. And what is so interesting, if you have not been using the chatbot arena and the leaderboard, the shortcut is lmarena.ai. Mm-hmm. Today, and from the beginning, ChatGPT has been there. Then there's Gemini, Grok is there. But they're now breaking it down. The language is coding. And maybe at some point in time, we're going to see also time series. And the bottom line thing here is that it's us. It's the users who decide which is the better, the left one or the right one, for the use case I have here. So it's going to be useful for all of us.
Now let's talk about a use case in the main part about sound AI. And you did an interview at the AI with Purpose Summit with Katrin from Switzerland. And Katrin wrote me an email last week and said, when will you publish the episode? And I said, after the summer break, we will publish. And she said, yeah, I have to add something because I missed something in the podcast. So it's very important that Katrin and her team convert sounds into, they say, fingerprints.
Fingerprints,
and,
right.
Yeah, and then compare them. And these fingerprints are not fingerprints for sure, are long series of numbers, she said. And then she can train the model with this fingerprints. And yeah, that's important.
I can imagine that. I mean, I'm again, not being a sound specialist, the book that I wrote is going to be put out of order, by the way, very soon. I read yesterday. And it was 3 years ago, sitting in a garden, and it was about, I heard the bird, and then I made myself knowledgeable. And how do you, and that's, of course, every bird has a fingerprint, an audio print of Hertz signal. It's the same with your voice, my voice. That's why, at least still today, we recognize each other by the voice. And what she's going to be talking about is the use of exactly audio in areas where it's very difficult for humans to come into, right? So there's what is it? Is it oven here? Very hot.
Yeah.
And it's they're going to put in a microphone.
They burn waste or something, right?
Right. And that's is the example they're giving there. And they need to know where something is coming down, if it's blocked or not. And then they use a fingerprint and they say, okay, something is coming down, fingerprint. And then in the future, you're going to put it inside of the factory, and then they listen if the process is going fine or not, because they cannot easily do it with camera. I don't know, but they do it with audio. It's a very interesting approach.
And she also talks about robotics in the end, but you have to listen to the episode first, and then you know why also robotics will benefit from sound and AI. Peter, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Robert, thank you. Looking forward to a next range of whatever, 3 months, I guess, until the end of the year, Industrial AI podcast. And dear listener, thank you very much for having been part of our show, and looking forward to have you listen, maybe look at us again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I'm sitting here with Katrin Hössli. She's from Rocket Science, and Max Schönsteiner. He's from Martin GmbH für Umwelttechnik. We are at the Siemens Summit, AI for Purpose Summit here in Munich today. And the two of you just did a wonderful, very interesting presentation. I thought I must have you on the microphones. But let's start maybe with very quickly, you both of you quickly introducing yourself, who you are and what you do.
Hi, thank you for the invitation. My name is Max. I'm leading the R&D department at Martin. Martin is a supplier for waste to energy plants and components. And yeah, we are building basically the whole plant and servicing it from beginning to end of life.
Okay, Katrin.
Hello, my name is Katrin. I am with Rocket Science. Rocket Science is a company focusing on acoustics. We change sound if they're really loud, and we use sound to optimize quality, to give situational awareness, or to use to improve processes.
Sounds great. And I think it is the second part that maybe you were talking about today, or who of you is going to give a quick introduction into the use case that you were scribing to our audience here today?
Yeah, I can do that. In waste to energy, we have the problem that we have to burn the things nobody wants. We burn the waste, we get rid of all the recyclables, and then we have the all left that we have to transform into energy. And the problem with this is that we don't know what it is, and it has a lot of substances in it. It has, you can find the whole periodic system and maybe some more elements inside there, and that's the problem, because we are burning it, and there are a lot of substances in the flue gas, and the flue gas, we want to get rid of the energy, so we are installing heat exchangers there, and the elements in the flue gas, they attach to the heat exchanger. There are salts, there are ashes, and the efficiency of this heat exchanger, it decreases. So our task is to find a solution to clean these heat exchangers. There are some technologies we can use, but it is not so easy to find out if the heat exchanger is already clean or it needs more cleaning, and how often do we have to clean, which has a big effect at the OPEX in the end.
Now, and this is where acoustics come in. Is that right? Please explain how can it be that sounds can be part of a solution here?
Well, in the end, if you look at the physics of everything happening in the entire plant, we see what kind of development should happen and what should not happen. And based on that, we can detect if it's clean or not clean. And with the sound, we can, for example, measure how much ash is going through, or we can detect if the shock impulse have the right echo, and with that we can actually get the information that is needed to not do the cleaning based on time but based on the actual degree of cleanness.
So you brought a couple of examples. I think you're going to share one or two of those samples with us. Which are the ones that we are listening to? Which is the first one?
Yeah, the first one is just simply ash falling into a hopper to get an impression on how that sounds. And it's like a clicking and a slipping and a dizzle you can hear.
Okay, let's listen to it now. So what did we just hear?
Yeah, everything was clicking or something like that. It was ash falling onto a steel hopper. And what we do is that we count the energy which comes from the ashes to the hopper, and we accumulate it. And by that, we can say in that period of time, we had that amount of ash coming into the hopper from the heat exchanger, for example.
Oh, so it's like acoustics, audio, I'm looking for the right word, but it changed into the amount of energy by calculating what you've heard until a certain point.
Exactly.
Okay. Very good. Let's first listen to the second one, maybe, and then talk a bit more about it. So the second, what are we going to be listening to?
Yeah, we are going to listen to one of the cleaning possibilities. It's a shock pulse generator, and it's injecting a shockwave into the boiler, leading to a cleaning of the fouling on the superheaters and on the membrane walls inside that plant.
Bum, whatever, explosion, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I think I heard some kind of, I don't know, explosion, or you call it differently, I believe.
Yeah, it's a shock pulse you heard.
Shock pulse from a wave, air wave compression, air compression pulse, or?
Yes, it's, we have in a generator, we are creating high pressure with some burnable gases.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the amount of energy of that mixture into the boiler. And this creates a shock wave, and which cleans the boiler. And what we heard was the shock wave itself. And in the end, of course, we hear ashes falling again into the hopper.
Okay. So is this kind of also a confirmation then at the end that actually the ashes came down? Is that what you're using it for as well? Or?
Yeah, we have maybe two use cases in that. First is that we are looking at the echo of the shockwave. And this gives us some information about how good was the cleaning. If you're standing in a room where there's nothing on the walls, then you have a high echo. And if you have some carpets, which in our case is fouling, on the walls, then the echo is somehow not as strong as before. And by that, we can say, okay, it was a good, effective cleaning or not.
Very good. And is this deciding on if it was good or bad, is that done by humans all the time? Or do you put that knowledge into a model and the model will just represent the information like at an inference point, so to say? So if the person who is running your plant does not see a yellow light or another light, or maybe all the time sees a green light, knows that this was correct. So maybe the person does not have to. How does that work?
At the moment, those cleaning components, they are done scheduled with time. And the plan is now to do it with a model. And we're on our way to do that.
Very good. I didn't know about that, but it seems the right thing to do. So it's more like, was it always the plan to do like a phase? Let's first see that we do it on a fixed time, and if it works, then we move on. So you're working towards semi or towards an automatic, autonomous way of doing things.
Yes, the goal is to do it autonomous in the long run, but we're not there yet. We're still really learning and understanding to look at what is the most efficient cleaning process as well. And based on that, then focusing on what really counts.
Very good. I asked you before as well, but share with our listeners, please. What are the typical use cases then, maybe in general? That's fine. And then moving into an industrial environment, we are the Industrial AI podcast. So what are the typical use cases where you can use audio?
Well, when you think of people working in a factory, for example, grinders or millers or welders, when you talk to them, they actually all use their hearing very, very much, because a lot of the processes cannot be seen, but they need to listen. Also, other mechanics at the moment, they do multiple things at once, and they can only do that by using their hearing to hear if something's wrong and then focus on the other machine. And through that, they're a lot more efficient. And we now do that. We support machines. We support robots to do it, to do what other people used to do.
I was going to say, because that capability you do not get from the beginning. So you're a young person. Maybe you had a certain base of introduction to what it is that you need to do. So you come relatively new aboard. And then you see those, you know, older persons, and you suddenly find, oh, that's the way it is, right? And then you find out how are they doing this, and then they tell, I don't know, but well, can't you hear that? Is that the? And if we continue that with the idea that many of the elder generation are now, you know, going to their deserved doing at the end of their life nothing or whatever they're going to do but not work, then you want to continue to keep that information from that experience.
That is one part, but it's also the change of jobs at the moment. There are not many people only focusing on one machine anymore. And there's also, for example, with welders, there are not enough trained welders worldwide. So there's a lot of a high request for welding robots, for example. Mm-hmm. And the welding robots, they have the issue that they cannot detect quality changes with what they have at the moment, because a lot of machines and robots, they don't hear. They see, but they don't hear.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to change.
I'm going to ask tomorrow, because I know that I'm meeting with a friend of mine who's a welder, and I'm going to ask him.
Do that.
And I'm sure that he's going to confirm that he's using his listening capabilities. And I would have never thought of that. So those capabilities which today the human has, you will be moving, well, I guess you're selling them into robot manufacturers.
Yes.
Who then can install those additional capabilities as well.
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much. It's of course, it's a very interesting use case as such, but it's even more interesting for us as a podcast, you know, as we're not doing video, but we are basically doing a sound solution as you do as well. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.